Yo.
Hey, I'm Emily Chenevere, CEO of the Austin Board of Realtors. Real estate is changing. Disruptors are flipping the script before most of us have even had our morning coffee. So we're taking it to the experts to peel back the layers on what you need to know. Scratch what you think you know about this business and listen up for a new version of an old industry. Joe Rand is a managing partner of Better Homes and Gardens Rand Realty and Rand Commercial Services, and managing partner of Hudson United Mortgage, Hudson Abstract Mortgage, and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. He's a graduate of Georgetown University Law School, and he's also been in this business for a long time. Joe sat down with me about a year ago to talk about how agents can keep it simple in improving their customer service and their support of their clients day in and day out. He's going to do it again with us live next April at Austin Board of Realtors' new conference, ThinkUp. You can learn more about the conference at ThinkUp Austin, but I want you to know this. This is a high-energy, high-impact opportunity for you to learn more tangible tactics you can take back into your business the minute you leave the building. We want to make sure that you walk away with the knowledge you need to improve your professionalism, improve your service to your clients, and I know Joe Rand's going to help you do that. So take a listen to an old episode of Scratch That so that you get a new opportunity to think about joining us live April 7th and 8th at ThinkUp here in Austin, Texas.
A disruptor is somebody who comes into an industry and finds a way to do what the incumbent people in the industry, the existing industry, is doing, but to do it better, faster, or cheaper, or any, you know, better and faster, but not necessarily cheaper, or better and cheaper, but not necessarily faster. It comes from the old project management triangle, which is that you can get something better, faster, or cheaper. Pick any two. But if you want it to be better and faster, it's not going to be cheap. You want it to be cheap and fast, it's not going to be good. That sort of thing. But the idea is that basically a disruptor comes into an industry and finds a way to do things better than they've been being done. And there's a lot of concern that that's what's happening in the real estate industry right now.
Yeah. So what pain point are disruptors solving? What's the better, faster, cheaper that you think our current disruptors are addressing that we're not as a traditional brokerage?
You know, it's funny because the real sad part about all this is where the disruptors are targeting is they're targeting the parts of the transaction that we as real estate agents and brokers don't have a lot of control over, that the part of the business that we really manage is getting the property on the market, managing the offers and all that kind of stuff, or on the buy side, taking the people out to look at properties and, you know, the process of buying or selling a home that we handle is actually handled pretty well, and most people are happy with it. The part that where it really breaks down is after that offer is accepted, and you now have to go through the transactional process from basically from contract to closing. That's what takes up all the time. That's what takes up a lot of the frustration. Most of it comes from mortgage, but some of it comes from title. It comes from having to process the information from inspections and things like that. So, you know, where you're seeing disruptors, the real kind of disruption in the industry is like the iBuyer program, which comes in and says, we'll buy your home in 3 days. And what they, to some extent, they're attacking the traditional industry from the perspective of that it might take us, say, 30 to 60 days to 90 days to market a home and get it up for sale. And you have to live in the home while it's for sale. And you have to do all the staging and detailing. And the iBuyer program comes in and avoids all that. But really what they're doing is they're cutting out all the time that takes place after the offer is accepted, because they're not dealing with mortgages. They're not really even doing with title. They're just coming in, make an offer, buy the property. And that's where I think the vast majority of these entrants are coming in and really attacking the inefficiency of the real estate transaction, which is, I think, the biggest pain point. Any real estate agent would say the hardest part of the process is what happens from contract to closing.
Yeah. What I think is interesting about that is we read an Edmund and I see the headline disruptor, and a lot of the articles stem around the concept of how the commission structure is changing or how the payout is changing, not the actual steps in transaction management.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying about it's that, you know, the point at which that offer is collected all the way through the closing point that's uber painful for the consumer and uncomfortable for the agents that are involved.
Yeah, I think that, there are lots of different types of disruptors. And you know, I've talked about the iBuyer thing, which I think is the most, you know, that to me is what's disruptive. See, when you talk about all these different business models and they're compressing the commission, that to me is not disruption. It's not disruption for somebody to come in and say, I'm just going to give a lower level of service and charge less for it. That's not disruption. I mean,
right.
That's something the industry has dealt with for, you know, 100 years of people coming in and undercutting on price. That's not the extent to which any of those discounters are coming in and saying we're leveraging technology in a new and interesting way, which allows us to provide a comparable level of service for less money. You know, that's arguably a little bit disruptive, but for the most part, you know, we throw the word disruptive around, I think, a little broadly to say anybody who's kind of shaking things up. And yeah, I guess if you want to define it that way, that's fine. But like, you know, when you're looking and say, okay, there's a company coming in, they're going to do it for cheaper. Well,
that's just capitalism, right?
Yeah,
that's the market.
Anybody can do that. You know, anybody can come in and open a hotel down the block and charge less per room than what I'm charging. It might not be as nice a hotel, but they're not really disrupting my business. They're just price competing with me.
Do you think we're being reactive? I mean, I you know, you're right. I hear the word disruptor. We call it the D word at ABOR because it's thrown about so frequently. But are they making headway with consumers? Are we being reactive to the potential for somebody solving a pain point that we're not solving ourselves as an industry?
I think, well, you're asking two questions. Are they gaining traction with consumers? And I think that, you know, different companies are having different success rates of making traction. But I think the more interesting question is, are we reactive? Of course we're reactive. The entire industry is, at least the incumbent industry, is entirely reactive to any new entry. In fact, I think we're almost hypersensitive in this industry because, you know, I go to Inman or I go to, you know, another conference and I see some of these models get thrown out there and the agents will like literally come to me or like, and this is the classic. There'll be an article in the New York Times on the Sunday real estate section about some sort of transformative technology, you know, or a FSBO company or whatever. Usually it's like a FSBO company or a discounter. And I'll get like 20 emails from agents saying, what are we going to do about this? These people are coming into our market. They're discounting. I'm like, relax. I mean, this is nothing new. It happens every – if you were to go – and I think the last time it happened, I went through and I searched the archives of the New York Times and I found that literally they write the same story every 3 years about some new entrant into the market who's going to completely disrupt the 6% commission structure, which is what they always call it, even though – commissions are negotiable and they're different everywhere. But yeah, I think we're entirely reactive. I think actually we're overreactive that we there's a lot of Chicken Little in the real estate industry whenever somebody comes in and wants to do something differently. And to go to the larger point, which is to say, well, how do we keep ourselves from being so reactive or hyper overreactive? And that would be to actually take command of this ourselves and actually do something ourselves to fix what's broken in the industry. And that's where I think we really let ourselves down as an industry, because we have not over the last 25 years done enough as an industry to improve that real estate transaction or find ways to get economies of scale that we could charge less and still put as much in our pocket. And things like that, that we have not innovated in a way that helps the consumer. And so we've left ourselves open to a lot of this. And that's precisely the best way to describe that as reactive, which is the word you used.
Yeah.
Absolutely reactive.
Yeah. So they might actually be solving pain points. Consumers may or may not be attracted to what disruptors offer, but we're definitely chicken-littling the situation. What would you tell traditional agents, my members about and listeners about how to be responsive but not reactive to the changes that they're seeing in our market?
It's a great question. You know, my fundamental advice to any real estate agent is to get better at your job and to do great work for your clients. Because in my experience, people that do great work for their clients who are really on the ball, who are really proficient at any industry, never face disruption. You know, there are still extremely successful travel agencies out there. We all think that the archetype, the stereotype is that, oh my God, the real estate agents are going to go away, the travel agents, because there's a lot of comparisons people make between the two types of industries.
Like CPAs and travel agents, right?
Yeah. There are still travel agents. There are many travel agents. If you go actually study the travel agency industry, I think they're doing more revenue now than they were doing 20 years ago. There's fewer of them, but they're actually doing better. And the reason for that is that even with Expedia and Travelocity, and you can book online, do it all yourself, what they did was they adjusted and they now focus on, you know, experience travel and high-end travel, and they book event travel and group travel and things like that. They went into specialties that, yeah, they're not booking your flight to Miami that you can do for yourself for $300, but they're booking $10,000 vacations for people and they're making a nice commission on that. And I sort of look at that and I say, well, you know, we have to adapt in that same way. You know, I don't know any great doctors who starve, or plumbers who starve, or hairstylists who starve. Anybody that provides a service for a fee, if they're good at what they do, they generally are pretty successful. And the industry might change, and there might be fewer people in it in the future, and that would not necessarily be a bad thing. But if you're good at your job, you're going to be fine. You really are. You just have to really focus on the, you know, not on, you know, getting better at prospecting, but getting better at managing a client through a transaction, better at staging, better at marketing, better at pricing homes, better at reading buyers, better at counseling people through the process. If you're really good at that, you're gonna make it through just fine. I really believe that.
So your new book kind of begins that conversation around how to be better at your job. What's the number one thing that you think a listener, a realtor today, could do to be better at their job?
On a global, well, all right, I'll give you a big one in terms of mindset, and I'll give you a small one in terms of a practical suggestion. The big one and the theme of the book is to focus on what other people need. Think expansively about what people need, and then creatively about how to give it to them. And I use as an example, and I use this in the first book as well, the idea that, you know, the free CMA, that we knew what people needed. They needed to know what their home was worth, but our response as an industry was to offer them a free CMA that was really just a come on for us to give a listing presentation, that we weren't really interested in servicing the need. We just want to try to turn it into a listing presentation. And then Zillow comes in, services the need, builds a $10 billion company out of servicing the need. Well, there's lots of opportunities like that for us right now that we're missing, of things that consumers need that we're not giving them. And if we focus on actually what people need and how to give it to them in better ways, that's kind of the global message of the book. And, you know, in lots of different, and then in the book, I talk about how could we do that in terms of lead generation? How do we do that in terms of conversion when you sit down in a listing presentation? And how do we do that when we're actually managing a client through the process? How do we think broadly about what clients need and how to give it to them? But that's the sort of a big mindset, kind of big thought type thing.
Right.
I'll give you something small, because people are like, well, what can I do on a very practical level? What can I do tomorrow? Like on a very I would say this, go get a staging certification. Like on a very fundamental level, not enough agents provide staging services to their clients. They think that staging is only for high-end homes, or it can only be done by interior decorators or people with a certain expertise. And it's really not true. Most staging is pretty fundamental cleaning and decluttering, which does not require an interior design degree to know how to do. And it's something that every real estate agent I know and every agent listening to this would agree that if you went and staged every one of your listings, those listings would sell more quickly and probably for a better price. So it's something we're not doing as an industry generally for most of our clients, certainly not most of our clients below the top end, you know, top 10% of our price points. But something you could take a day-long class, feel confident that you know how to do it, have a certification that would establish your bona fides at doing it, tell all your clients, this is what I do, and then learn how to talk to them about how to get convince them to do the things they need to do to make their house pop. And then if you did that, you'd be better at your job. Like on a fundamental level, you'd be better at your job if you did that.
You could probably take that class at the association.
I wouldn't be surprised if, for example, your association
gives
that class.
The Austin Board of Realtors might offer that class.
My God.
That's right.
What a coincidence. And you could take it in a lot of different places, or you could read a book on it. Or, I mean, we did in our company, and we brought in somebody who was really wonderful who did it. And we had about 500 agents actually take it out of the 1,200 agents we have in the company. We wanted it to be something everybody did, and we got pretty close because people took it, and now some of them have taken it since then online and whatnot. But the biggest reaction people had to was that, all right, it was good. I learned some stuff, but most of it I kind of already knew. And that's really the way it is. Like, you know, yeah, do you need an interior decorator to tell you how to clean a house? Like, you know how to clean a house. You know what decluttering looks like. I think you need the good eye to do the stuff that really high-end homes need, to mix levels and textures and colors and stuff like that. That, I think, is advanced, and that really is something you want to bring in a professional stager for if you're doing it for a high-end home. But you know, most homes just need to be cleaned and decluttered, and we can do that. And there's no magic to
one of the things that I think a lot about, and that I hear a lot about, is And I don't know if it's responsive or reactionary to think about what's the new value proposition of a realtor today. So access to market data, available inventory details, sold data is not on lockdown anymore. That train left the station long ago.
Yeah.
And the value proposition of a realtor is not access to that holy grail.
Yeah.
So if it's not that, then what is it? How do you recommend agents today talk about what their real value is and what their service is? What language should they be using?
Yeah, you make a great point that I feel like too many agents will still go in to talk to like a seller and say, and look at all the places I'm going to list your home. It's going to be on all these different websites. And you know, there was a time when that was a differentiator, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, when it took a certain amount of technical sophistication to get a listing on Zillow or on Trulia. It didn't just get now, but now you just put it on the MLS and it goes through. So, you know, most brokers submit their listings to MLS. Most brokers, their listings are on Zillow and Trulia and like 500 other sites. And most MLSs do it for you for free. So like, how are you different from the guy down the block if you're doing that? And the same thing from the buy side, this idea that, well, you need to come to me because I know what properties are for sale. Like buyers, I would think a very healthy percentage of buyers today, they're the ones who say to their agent, hey, I saw this property online. Can we go look at it? And that's the property they ultimately buy. I don't think it's most of the kind, but I think it happens a healthy part of the time.
Yeah.
So what is our value? I mean, that's not our value anymore. Neither of those things are our value. And so what's the language we should be using?
Yeah.
What I tell people to do is to elongate the process, separate out and really delineate all the different services that you provide. So, for example, in Disruptors, Discounters, and Doubters, my first book, I talk about the value proposition and I break down kind of for sellers what I think of as the seven services for sellers. And then I expand on that in the second book to really, you know, explain how you talk about them to clients. But it's the seven services for sellers are you counsel them through the process from the very beginning, the first meeting, all the way through the end. And there's lots of counseling that takes place and handling issues and explaining things to them and preparing them for what's to come. And then number two is you help them price the home. That's a big service, a really important service we provide that that we don't talk about enough as a service. We do it at the listing presentation, but we don't think of it as like one of the most important things we do. Number three, staging, which we've talked about. Number four, marketing. But we need to talk about marketing differently, not about distribution, but about the quality of the content we create, as well as our ability and skill at targeting the potential buyers for that property. So that's four is marketing. Five is negotiation. Everybody knows what negotiation is, but it's something that I think, you know, a talented agent makes a difference for clients in the quality of the negotiation work they do. Number six, transaction management. We barely talk about that when we meet with a seller or a buyer. We barely talk about the skill that it takes to manage a client through the hardest part of the deal, which is what happens between contract and closing. And we should talk about it. It's almost like we don't want people to think it's hard to buy or sell a home because they might be scared and then not go ahead and buy or sell a home. But like, it is really hard to do it. We shouldn't be making it look easy, because if we make it look easy, they don't think they need a good agent to take them through it. And then the seventh service is communication, which kind of permeates through the entire process. The quality of how well you communicate clearly and frequently to the client.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of stuff. Like, those are pretty important services all the way through. And we don't talk about some of them at all during the listing presentation. And then some of the other ones we talk about in the wrong way.
Yeah. One thing I think is interesting about communication is I know so many agents who are like the Mary Poppins of their transactions. Things come out of the duffel bag. Everything is fine. Their client never knows there was a problem. And I hate that they're not sharing more of their value by exposing the client to the ups and downs of the transaction in a way that says, I've got your back. Everything's fine. This is what I have mitigated. This is how I've mitigated this.
Yeah.
You know, they're that lack of communication they think is a service to their client by not stressing them out through the course of the transaction. I think you're totally doing yourself a disservice if you're not highlighting what you did on their behalf.
Yeah, you got to show your work all the way through the process. Like we have a graphic that we use that shows the we call it the journey from when somebody meets with us to when they have either bought or sold a home. And we have little stops along the way that are all the different things that have to happen between A and Z to get them from the beginning to the end of the process. And there's a lot of stuff that happens. And like, you know, we're not really good. We have, no one's really created, for example, a really good program to automate kind of notifications to a client of things that we have done for them.
Yeah.
That we can tell them and, you know, we can send them an email or whatever else, but that it's automated, that we put up the sign and then they get an alert, hey, the sign went up. Or we get feedback and they get an alert, hey, the feedback's here, take a look at it this way. That no one's really mastered the idea of, it's one thing, the Holy Grail has always been transaction management. Like, let's have we need a transaction management program that manages the transaction for the client. And I don't know if it's so hard to do that. And I don't know if we actually need it, but I do think what we need is good transaction communication, like a platform that actually generated an ongoing transparent series of communications between agent and client and the loan officer and the client and, you know, the attorney or the escrow officer and the client, that would keep the client apprised of what's happening and transparency and all that kind of stuff. And it's just really tough to do. But what happens sometimes is that, like you say, the agent doesn't communicate enough about everything they're doing for that client.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing that strikes me as pertinent right now around communication is how you talk about the commission and really how you talk about compensation in this profession. It's another thing that we hear when we talk about disruptors and discounters too, to some degree, is that there's more transparency in their pricing. I don't know that that's true. I think the way that they talk about it is different than traditional brokerages and traditional buying and selling agents. But what do you think about how we might consider changing our language, or how direct should realtors be in discussing their compensation?
You know, it's funny. I think your point about transparency is true. I think that agents who are charging what, for whatever market might be considered a full commission, tend to not want to talk about commission. They'd rather talk about the service they provide. And they're transparent when it comes to the services, but they don't talk about what they do for they don't want to talk too much about commission. And then you flip it, and then the discounters, all they want to do is talk about commission. Yeah. Because they're like, oh, look how much less I charge than those other people. But then they're not as transparent about the services because they're not clear about what gets left off the table, what they're not doing for people as opposed to what they're doing. So it's kind of like, I mean, it's like any sort of sales situation. You're going to elaborate on your strengths and you're going to try to minimize what you perceive to be your weaknesses. And if you're a full fee broker or agent, you're going to want to emphasize the services, the quality of the work you do, and the value you provide, and not talk too much about the raw number of what you charge. So that's fairly natural. I do think that we get caught up too much I think we get worried too much about commissions. I think that people are generally open to, they're willing to pay for what they perceive to be the value of what they get. And I don't think we've always done a very good job of articulating our value. We go back to the value proposition that we talked about earlier.
Right, right.
That if you're getting a commission objection, what you're getting is you're getting somebody who is not bought into the idea that you're worth what you're charging.
Yeah. I mean, if you're getting a commission objection, that's on you. You communicated poorly your value proposition, and you need to rethink the way that you're approaching the service that you provide these clients.
Yeah. I think, you know, listen, I wouldn't necessarily say that you get a commission objection, you've done something, you've failed. Because a lot of times people come into it and they're gonna make that commission objection no matter what. But I do think that we invite it too much, you know, in a lot of different ways. And like, for example, I don't even like calling it a commission. I like calling it a contingency. I like to remind people that, you know, this fee is only paid if you're happy with you get your home sold. You don't have to pay it unless the home gets sold, or you don't have to pay it on the buy side. You may not even pay it at all unless you think about it in terms of being paid out of the proceeds. But, you know, I don't get paid unless you're happy and you buy a home. And, you know, that's we don't emphasize that enough. Like, when you say to a seller, you don't have to pay this fee unless you're happy with the price you get and what you put in your pocket. I don't get paid unless you get your deal done. And that's, you know, lawyers make a big deal of that with their contingency fee. You know, we're going to sue and you don't have to pay us a dollar unless we win. Well,
right, right.
My fee is a contingency. You don't have to pay me unless we win. And by win, I mean, we get you a deal. We find you a buyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we should talk more about that way. We talk about commissions all wrong. We run scared. We do stupid things. Like one of the really dumb things we do as an industry with commission is everybody for too many brokers use a standard contract. And states have different rules on this. So I'm talking about the states that don't have rules on this, but they'll use the standard contract that comes from MLS or comes from the association, which is probably a very good contract.
Hey now,
but
here's the thing.
You guys put out a contract and your contract has to leave a lot of terms blank because you're not allowed to put on an X percent commission on the contract that you're giving to multiple brokers, right? You have to leave that blank. You have to leave the term blank. You have to leave lots of operative terms of the contract blank because otherwise there would be an antitrust issue if your form contract that you provide to all the brokers who are members of your organization that they have to fill in those blanks themselves, correct?
Correct, correct.
But in most states, it's not necessary that I use that contract. Or even if I use, because the MLS requires it, which they may or may not be able to do, even if I use the MLS contract, I don't need to use that form. I can create my own contract and I can fill in all those blanks. The idea that every commission is negotiable is absolutely true, but it doesn't mean that my contract has to leave a blank where the commission is. About 10 years ago in my company, we took out all the blanks of the agreement. We stopped using the MLS agreement. We created our own. It tracks the MLS agreement. It has all the protections, both for the client and for the broker in the contract, but it eliminated the blank for the term and for the holdover clause and for the commission and all that stuff. And it just put in what we wanted it to be. And in the year after we did it, our listing commission rate went up by about 0.2%, just by not having a blank there that invited objections and invited people filling it in themselves, that just putting it in, people still made commission discounts. They still crossed it out and initialed it and put whatever number they agreed to with their client. But it just, by putting it pre-printed on the form, it made a difference. We made like $1 million more than we would have made that year as a company just by doing that.
Yeah.
And like, that's like a silly thing that if an agent goes in there, when have you ever sat down with any other professional and the contract, the most important thing, the price of the deal is left open. You know, you sit with a doctor and you say, oh, you have to do this MRI. How much do you want to pay for the MRI? No, you pay for what's on the contract. You pay what's in the bill. You
know, right. TBD on that. We'll see how it goes, right?
if I heal, yeah, then I'll pay you more than if I don't heal.
I love it. Joe, I so appreciate your candor. I like how direct you are in telling our members and listeners what they need to be doing. So let's leave them with one takeaway. You told them all to go take staging classes, preferably at their association. What's the one more thing you would tell them to do right to just continue to stay ahead of the curve, ahead of disruptors, ahead of discounters, and ahead of doubters?
Yeah. All right. One more kind of cool thing, like that, in a very practical suggestion, and it costs a little bit of money. And that is, I tell this to every agent, and we'll see who takes me up on it, is you and your company most likely have a program of marketing that you do for your listings. And then you have a separate program that you do for your high-end listings. You have a luxury program or a fine homes program or something like that, where those fine homes, those really expensive homes, they might get better stuff. Like they get professional photography, they get floor plans, they get a higher quality of marketing material. They might get a Matterport 3D walkthrough video or conventional video or whatever. You do other stuff. And what I would say for you to do is take a look at that luxury program and think about providing it to every one of your listings. Be the broker or be the agent that does the fine homes program, even for a $100,000 condo in your market. With the idea being that even the most high-end luxury marketing program is like under $500, right? So for $500, even spending $500 on the commission on a $100,000 condo still leaves you a pretty good net off that deal. But what it would do is every time you went in to talk to a seller, you'd be able to say to that seller, I give you the best content marketing, the most beautiful marketing of any broker or any agent in this marketplace. And that to me is a very powerful thing to be able to say to somebody at a listing presentation. And it's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it costs you a little bit more than taking pictures with your phone or whatever else you're doing. but I think you give a better service to your clients, and I think it helps you get every listing you go out on. And every time, you know, every listing you put out there becomes a banner advertisement for you and how good the work you do is.
Yeah. Your brand matters and the quality of your work matters. So that resonates. I appreciate it. Well, Joe, thank you so much. We appreciate having you on. And I know that our listeners are going to value what you've offered them.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Guys, let's make this a thing. If you liked what you heard today, share this episode on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and tag me at M. Chenevere. That's E.M. Chenevere. You can also subscribe to Scratch That on iTunes and SoundCloud and grab show notes on abor.com/scratchthat. Thanks for joining me today, and go get some stuff done out there.